Thank you. Let us stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I just have one announcement to make tonight. Without objection from the council, as per the city manager, I'm going to move items number 6 and items number 10 to the top of the agenda. Next, we're going to go call to the public. We have a few people signed up. Let's start off with Susan Blackford.
Susan Blackford, Warren, concerned citizens of Bisbee. You ready, Ashley?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I just gave Ashley tonight a new petition regarding the following remarks. I am here tonight to express my concern on the decision that Sharon and Finance has made. Let me explain. Last year, I was appointed to be on the Municipal Property Commission. I went to the budget meeting last year. I was given a free copy of the budget by Sharon as a member of the commission to keep and review. Last week, before the May 9th meeting, I asked for my free copy to be reviewed. I was in Tucson that Monday, and the appointment could not be changed. Sharon said I could print it out for myself or pay $26. The point is not that I could print all the pages out. This is the basic point. Council, think what this means to all of us that serve on the city of commissions and boards. If from now on, if this new policy stays, that any board member requesting documentation to do their job and any of the commissions has to pay a fee to the city, as dictated in this email from Nina per instructions of Sharon, and I have the documentation. Can someone like Sharon in finance make a policy decision that is without approval of the council? It's voters, city council, volunteers. Sharon's down here in the organizational chart. It does not include making any decisions regarding boards and commissions. Do we all start letting all the people who give their time and service that if you need any paperwork to help you serve the city will be charging you? Let me know with this petition so that I can make a big announcement in the paper. Serena, how would you like it if your sustainability members had to be charged every time they needed something to help them help you on the committee? What time it would take to be printed is not the point. And if Sharon tells you that it was directed only at me to charge me as a commissioner, what does that tell you, Council? With all the mess the city is in right now, there are bigger problems to solve, but to me, like always, if you do not something that's a wrong policy at the beginning, it will go on, and you could start losing board and commissioners and members, and is that what you really want? Thank you.
Thank you, Susan Blackford. Next, we will go to Molly Herrero?
Herrico.
Yeah. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Molly Herrico.
My name is Molly Herrico. I have lived in Bisbee for 38 years. I grew up in Bisbee. I'm a mother and a homeowner within this community. I would like to address whomever is pushing the new hotel in downtown Bisbee. Please do not frame this project as something which will advance Bisbee. Undoubtedly, it would have an economic effect on our town, but I would like for those behind this project to call it what it truly is, the pursuit of personal profit. I would say to those behind this project, if you cared about invigorating our community, you would invest in those who live here year-round. This project caters to tourists. A little of that is okay. However, if we bend over so far backwards, our back will break. In the last week, I personally noticed Starbucks trash strewn about our town. I've also noted quite frequently that tourists seem to think they can walk in the roadways whenever and wherever they want. Do we really want to focus all of our energy on bringing people here who do not respect or value the soul of our town? If we encourage more tourism, we should consider its impact on the community of Bisbee and plan accordingly. Bisbee is made special by the unusual people, musicians, artists, and unique members of this community. Do not take for granted or sell out those who live here, those who make up the community that is Bisbee. Whomever claims to be concerned with reinvigorating this town should invest in the people who live here, who serve you your meals out, your drinks, who offer musical entertainment, who run your library, radio station, schools, artist communities, who work in the businesses which keep Bisbee going year-round. I would suggest that these entrepreneurs who wish to make Bisbee into a place to solely gratify tourism put your money where your mouth is. Truly invest in this community. Do the people, the families, the children of Bisbee really need another hotel or another realty? The city of Bisbee needs to concern itself with preparing for an uncertain future. For example, by installing water catchment systems, solar and wind power, using some of Bisbee's empty lots for community gardens. One glaring example of this cavernous divide between catering to tourism rather than investing in our community is our city pool. We should be ashamed that the Bisbee City Pool will be closed this summer. This is outrageous. People wish to build a new hotel in the heart of our historical town while the kids of Bisbee go without a swimming pool in the desert in the summer. Not every parent will be able to drive the 30 miles to the nearest swimming pool. I reiterate, let us consider what it means to invest in a community. Which types of investment will nourish the actual community as opposed to simply padding the pockets of a select few? I propose that if this project is allowed to go forward, it is on the condition that the new business offer a percentage of profits to the community in the form of funds allocated and appropriately reinvested into the community to truly improve life for those who make this town home. Thank you.
Thank you, Molly Herrico. Next we have former council member Peter Van Gunlock.
Good evening, Mayor and Council, and citizens of Bisbee. This is the result of an overrun from the last meeting, so I wanted to really emphasize the points that I had brought up at that particular time, and that deals with data that I gleaned from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Police, sheriffs, deputies, law enforcement, as well as firefighters and EMS personnel have the highest rates of injuries of most other professions. Added to that are the life-shortening effects of interrupted sleep due to changing shift requirements. The rule of thumb is an average life expectancy of 7 to 8 years after retirement. We've recently witnessed a disturbing trend where unarmed EMS and firefighter personnel have become mortal targets as well as law enforcement. Pearson Financial Group, that manages pension funds for first responders, say that this is an occupational field that's poorly covered by prevailing plans. Among the risks associated with these occupations include divorce rates as high as 85%, 1 in 4 struggle with alcoholism, 10 to 30% struggle with PTSD, twice as likely to die from suicide when in the line of duty. Responder life expectancy is 15 years less than the general population. Please remember this before any complaints arise regarding the mistaken and misplaced perception that their retirement plans are too generous as well as expendable. By subcontracting out our first responder services to others than Bisbee entities, we lose the benefits of neighborhood policing as well as the comfort of having local folks helping their neighbors. Just recently in Lund, Sweden, the researchers have found that interrupted sleep mortally affects 1/3 of the population of the world. And what happens is melatonin is taken, a third of this gene pool has the inability to secrete insulin and throw off the control of blood sugar, according to a study published in the Journal of Cell Metabolism. In other words, circadian rhythms and interrupted sleep and night shifts and so forth are part of the hazards of performing this occupation. And as I keep reading, I'm finding more and more issues regarding the health exposure of our first responders. Thank you.
Thank you, former council member Peter Van Gunlock. Next, we are going to go to accounts payable. We have one person signed up for that, Ms. Susan Blackford.
Susan Blackford Warren, concerned citizens of Bisbee.
I would like, under the accounts payable, an explanation of $159.60 paid to Fred Miller through his business at Copper City Inn. I've got the invoice and the accounts payable here. Have any of you, Copper City Inn, and not directly to the Tucson Weekly, have any of you, including Jen, see the ad? While we were in Tucson on Monday, I got a copy of the Tucson Weekly and saw the half-page ad. It was a total waste of ad space. Let me explain the ad since I tossed the paper out earlier before I knew all the facts. The ad is a half a page, mind you. It looked like this. It had black border, all this valuable white space. It said, Discover Bisbee, either the email or website. Copper City Inn, either the email or website. Cafe Roca, email or website. Or Pitana Gallery. Nothing else was displayed. Nothing else was put on this ad. There were just those four lines. On Thursday, I was at the visitor center picking up the new surveys and mentioned in leaving to Jen that I saw the Tucson Weekly ad. Jed said she had not seen the ad, and someone called her and asked her to be in it, and she just said okay, just like that, not even seeing the ad. I told her how terrible the ad was, and she would not have done such a poor design. She said nothing. Then I see the $159.60 for the Tucson Weekly ad. It is really not about the money, and if she okayed it, then of course we have to pay it. But to me, it looks like Fred Miller's self-promotional ad only. Then, according to Jen, he asked her to participate. Why? In order to pay for the ad that she did not even see? So what is really going on? I know, Counselor, you are not concerned because this is bed tax money. But in my opinion, you should be. I know the council will probably not take an interest in this. It looks again that the visitor center is picking winners and losers with the bed tax money. This ad only benefits three merchants only, with an extra wasted space that could include others. You should care because you represent the whole town businesses. And again, favoritism over and over again. The visitor center chooses who to promote and who to leave out. I was wondering what any other bed and breakfast think. If I was one of them, I would demand that the visitor center pay for a separate and promoting of my business only. I would work very hard to pay for these bed tax, and I wasn't included in these self-promotional ads. I was also wondering if this was a real reason Fred Miller's wanted the 1% increase, so he can get more free advertising. I think Jen will say the Discover Bisbee website covers it all, but does it really? I think not. What does this ad really say to the council? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Susan Blackford. I will make some inquiries on this particular subject matter, and I will get back with you, or a staff member will.
I appreciate that, sir.
I will look into that and get an answer back to you. Next, we are going to, we're already there. Accounts payable. Do we have a motion?
I move that we pay accounts payable in the amount of $77,357.74.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to accept accounts payable in the amount of $77,357.74. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. Item number two, approval of the consent agenda, items A through C. I will read those. A, approval of the special event liquor license application submitted by the community Montessori School in Bisbee, Incorporated for an event to be held at the Central School Project located at 43 Howell Avenue, Bisbee, Arizona on Saturday, June the 4th, 2016 from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Melissa Holden, applicant. B, approval of a special event liquor license application submitted by the Turn Your Life Around, TYLA, Incorporated for an event to be held at City Park, 62 Brewery Avenue, Bisbee, Arizona on Saturday, May the 28th, 2016 from 12 p.m. till 7 p.m. Samuel Donaldson, applicant. C, approval of a special event liquor license application submitted by the Douglas Arts and Humanities Association, Incorporated for an event to be held at the Courtyard, 18 Brewery Avenue, Bisbee, Arizona, on Thursday, June the 9th, 2016, from 5 p.m. till 12 a.m., Matthew Cook, applicant. Do we have a motion?
I move that we approve the consent agenda, items A through C.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda, items A through C. Ms. Coronado, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Dowdy?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Kine?
Aye.
Councilmember Sullivan?
Aye.
Mayor Early?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. We are now going to go to item number 6 that we move to the front of the agenda. Discussion of possible approval of the special use permit 16-01 submitted by Kimber Wright for the purpose of allowing her to operate a used car sales lot from a property zone C1. Mr. Joe Ward, building inspector for the City of Bisbee.
Mayor and Council, you have the application before you, I think, that Ms. Wright and her husband have applied for an application for to be able to have a SUP for that property. And all the required advertising has been done. There have been no comments outside if there was one made at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting in favor of the you passing the SUP. And all public notices have been posted. And I personally, I defer to the expertise that we have in the Planning and Zoning Commission, and I agree with their proposed conditions. Do you have any questions about this?
Any questions from the council? Councilmember Hansen.
My only concern was, it's hard to tell from the drawing exactly how, whether or not the parking of vehicles there would impede any type of, or obstruct any vision for people coming into the circle, or from coming into the circle from 80 around the pit.
I don't think it will at all, but I think we can rest assured that the ADOT encroachment permit that they're going to have to get will require those things in the nth degree.
So they'll do an assessment
the traffic engineers
at that time.
Who are going to really look at that.
Okay. And the other question I have is, since it's C1 does not allow for it, do you have to change the zoning?
There's a special use permit that is so that it's revocable if they violate any of the conditions for the permit. They could have got rezoning. But
yeah,
Mr. Britt Hansen, city attorney.
Thank you. The zoning doesn't. Of C1 doesn't allow for car sales as a matter of right. That's why they had to go through the special use permit process, and that's the process to make sure that whatever the use is suitable for that particular spot. So this is the process.
And I have one other question.
Go ahead.
What's the length of time for the permit? I don't recall seeing it. I may have missed it. I mean, does it have to be redone every year, or is it a?
No, just once you have it, it'll stay with the it stays with the property until it's revoked or they quit using it.
Okay, or they're in violation or whatever.
Yeah, that would make it revoked.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the council? Well, once again, I will mention Mr. Ward mentioned it was passed unanimously by the Planning and Zoning Commission, so that always carries a lot of weight with me. Not 100% always, but usually a lot.
We got some real good experts on that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a motion?
I move that we approve a special use permit 16-01 submitted by Ms. Kimber Wright for the purpose of allowing her to operate a used car sales lot from property zone C1.
I second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other thoughts? No other thoughts. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously. We are now going to go to item number 10, discussion and possible approval to enter into an intergovernmental agreement by and between the Cochise County Sheriff's Office and the City of Bisbee. We'll go to Mr. Justin Johnson, City Manager, City of Bisbee.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the Council. What you have before you is an intergovernmental agreement that will allow us to partner with the Cochise County Sheriff's Office. I want to thank Commander Gintz and Commander Bradshaw for coming tonight in support of this particular agenda item. Several weeks ago, myself, Chief Achave, as well as our finance director, Sharon Bono, went and met with Sheriff Daniels and his command staff and really talked about opportunities for partnership and collaboration. Given the current status, and as you know, we're going through the recruitment process for new police officers to fill vacancies that, that currently exist. But as we go through that process, we really wanted to make sure we had the ability and additional resources to support our law enforcement efforts in providing safety to our community. So we're so thankful and appreciative of Sheriff Daniels and the work that he's put forth on this particular agenda item. The IGA itself was prepared by our own legal counsel. I think Lori took the lead on this particular item. And so it's been vetted by the city attorney's office, and the sheriff's office is here in support of this particular item.
Any questions from the council? I just have one. I think we've already talked about it a little bit for public consumption. These officers, when they sheriff's deputies, when they come to work for the city, will be under the auspices of Chief Achave. Is that correct?
That's correct. And, yeah. And so I'm very excited about, you know, again, the collaborative relationship that we all have. And when an officer is needed and the availability exists through CCSO, Cochise County Sheriff's Office, that's really pretty much how it would actually work. When the officers are available through their agency, they'll be deployed to assist us.
I appreciate you getting this together. It's necessary. Any other Council Member Klein?
My questions are for Chief Achave.
Mayor, Council.
Chief, this is strictly for backup, correct?
Correct.
It's not going to be a permanent IGA that we hold with them. And is it, I know that you have to have 3 days notice, but if we have an emergency, you can't give 3 days notice, but would we be able to pull resources from them in the event of an emergency?
In the event of an emergency, we could call for and ask. They're not bound at any time to have to come and cover for us. They have their own obligations and responsibilities, but if they have the ability to come and help us on our shortfalls, then they will be there to do that.
Okay, and then I know that we tested on Friday for officers, and they look like a good group of candidates there. And we're looking to hire how many officers?
Well, we're looking to hire 4 additional police officers.
Okay, and now with those 4 additional officers, will we be up to staff where we should be?
Well, we have 1 currently in the academy now. That will put us with the 4 more additional, that will put us to 12 police officers total once they're out of the academy.
So then we're still going to be down officers?
Yes.
How many will we be shy?
Full staffing, we're allotted for 14 okay. total, there's been positions that have not been funded because of the unfunded liability. In the budget process for last year, we had to absorb some of the cost for personnel to help cover that additional cost that we weren't prepared or ready for. So Chief Reyna's the amount for Chief Reyna was rolled into that to cover that.
Okay, because if I'm not mistaken, we used to have 16 or 18.
Over the years, we had as high as 20. So being down as low as we are, it's been challenging.
Okay. Thank you.
I would just say this appears to me to be an extremely necessary thing, because police officers, at the numbers that we have, obviously are doing longer shifts and are certainly under a great deal of stress. And you can tell, I'm sure I speak for the council, that we very much appreciate their efforts in this endeavor and yours as well for getting us through this time. Thank you, sir.
I have 1 comment, Mayor.
Councilmember Sullivan.
I'm happy to hear that once we have this backup team, they will be under your auspice, and so I assume that you'll be doing some sort of training with them on the way that Bisbee patrols, and so that they understand the difference between their county duties and Bisbee duties, and you know the things that we expect here.
Well, in regards to the Sheriff's Department, we work very closely with their deputies already, and as you see, there's a lot of times their deputies they help us already without the agreement. They're already there backing us up on calls, and we're backing them up on calls as well. You know, we work very well together, and that is the beauty of partnering with the Sheriff's Department is all the deputies that work this area are familiar, very much so familiar with the uniqueness of Bisbee, and so I don't foresee there being any issues, I'm looking forward to the partnership. I mean, I really think that it's going to be a good thing.
Once again, my thanks to Mr. Johnson, City Manager of Bisbee, Cochise County Sheriff's Department, Sheriff Daniels, and Chief Achavi for getting this instituted. It was really super necessary. So my sincere appreciation to all of you. Any other questions or comments from the council? Councilmember Hansen.
I just want to assure everybody that we're not stopping recruiting for officers, but because of the length of time that it takes, you know, it could take up to a year before we get a fully qualified officer. And this is much needed in order to take the stress and take the burden off of the officers that we have now.
That's a very good point. I'm glad to hear you say that because, you know, the officers are working, you know, a lot, and everybody's covering. So trying to schedule vacation time is very difficult, and then we get in a situation where at the end of the year nobody's been allowed the opportunity to take vacation, but yet because they didn't use it, potentially becomes a use-or-lose situation. We have to extend them, well, we don't have to, but usually city staff has been very helpful in helping us through the process to get the officers' time extended, but that only gives us 6 months, and then they have 6 months to use the time they should have used the year before, plus they have to use the time they're going to accrue the following year. It becomes very difficult, but hopefully with this partnership, for the times where we have officers needing to take vacation or trying to burn some of their time off, we'll be able to rely upon the Sheriff's Department to help pick up help out during those times of need.
Councilmember Hansen.
Sorry, I'm chatting today. I also want to point out that you could have 50 applicants or send out applications to 50 applicants and get 25 to test, and out of that get maybe 10% that pass. So it is a very lengthy process. Even if you're testing every 3 or 4 months,
right,
you're still, you know, if we need 4 officers, it's going to take us a while.
There is that's another very good point. We had a testing on Friday. The job was posted. We had more applications for this position than than I've ever heard of before. I talked to Chief Elkins, and he said the same. He's never heard of us having that many people put in an application. We had somewhere over 80 people that put in applications for this job. Now we're going to have 2 different test dates because some people could make one date but not the other. So we're having 2 test dates. Out of 80 applicants for the first test date, we had 12 people show up. So, you know, I mean, you get a lot of applications come in. Those that are going to show up, it's just kind of hit and miss. I think overall we ended up with 8 going to the final stage, 7 or 8 of them going to the final stages. So, you know, and that doesn't include, that's just the initial testing process. After that, we have to go to an extensive background investigation, looking into the background of these applicants to ensure that they are proper candidates for the position.
Councilmember Dowdy.
Chief Achavi, I just want to congratulate you on getting out there on the street yourself and taking care of business.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
I've seen you in the patrol cars going around. Thank you for that.
Yes, ma'am.
Any other questions or comments from the council? Do we have a motion?
I move to approve an intergovernmental agreement with the Cochise County Sheriff's Office for backup law enforcement services.
I second.
We have a motion and a second to approve an intergovernmental agreement with the Cochise County Sheriff's Office for backup law enforcement services. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Chief Achave. Item number three, we'll go back to the top of the agenda now. And thank you, Sheriff Deputies, for coming in tonight. Appreciate that. Discussion and possible approval of Resolution R-16-04, adopting the tentative budget for the City of Bisbee for fiscal year 16-17, as well as give notice of the time for public hearing to taxpayers for adoption of the budget. Once again, City Manager Mr. Justin Johnson.
Thank you, Mayor. What you have, what you have before you is a resolution, as stated, R-16-04, adopting the tentative budget for the City of Bisbee for FY16-17, and also to give notice for public comment. One of the things I did want to point out, one of the last discussions we had during the budget process was the inclusion of half of the funding for turnout gear for the fire department. So I just wanted to point out that is included in the attached document. And one of the issues that we did have, but it's on the fire page. I'll just tell you, it'll take us a while. It's actually page 26 of 88. But one of the things I wanted to point out, because our servers were down for several days on last week, we could not get in and change the description associated with this particular item. But it will actually read, for the sake of the public, the account number is 10-64-42050. It'll say non-cap turnout, and the amount will be $21,000. And so we were able to pull that out within the department's budget, and we talked to Chief about it. And so the areas that we pulled it from were contract services, education and training, building repair and maintenance, vaccines, as well as there was already $4,500 in that particular line item. And so we were able to pull it from the within the department itself. And even in the area of contract services, one of the things we set aside, because we weren't sure how we were going to fund the contract wildland firefighter, and we were thinking maybe if it were an independent contract or whatnot, but we moved that up to a part-time position. So I just wanted to...
Thank you. We do have a few people signed up, but I will say that I was with the city manager before the council session, and we went through where we was reallocating that approximately $21,000 for the turnouts, and it looked most reasonable to me, those various things that we went through. We do have a few people signed up. We'll start with Lucci Giacomino, former council member Giacomino.
I'm here tonight to address the proposed budget and the transfer from our youth council fund to capital improvements. The sum of $55,000 from this fund is supposedly going to be used to fix the swimming pool. This transfer by our Public Works Department is not only immoral, it's absolutely illegal. Who in their right mind steals money and then goes and changes the rules so they can keep the money and do anything they want to with it after the fix? The Youth Council in the past has done some wonderful things for the children of Bisbee. It's about time Public Works did the same within their own budget. To me, it is ludicrous to think that supposedly responsible adults can have no qualms about stepping on the backs of children who don't vote and appeasing adults who do vote, spending money that does not belong to them, and worst of all, the Public Works Department does not know how, they don't have a clue to fix that pool. One thing about the department that is very adept is blowing smoke and double talking from one day to the next. I am begging this council to do the right thing. Don't buy the boom truck. Fix the pool with that money and leave our youth council money where it definitely belongs. Thank you.
Thank you. Former council member Lucci Giacomino. Correct me if I'm mistaken, Ms. Buono. Let me just address that $55,000 just for a moment. Number one, there's approximately $124,000 in the youth funds in the LGIP. The
to use anything. There's $103,000 of that youth fund locked up by ordinance that Councilmember Giacomino in 2005 June locked that in. It's still there. It's probably why it's still there, and I certainly appreciate that. But for us to use the majority of that money, an ordinance would have to be repealed to be able to use that. However, it is in the budget, but you'll notice little parentheses around it. So if the Youth Council had a project, let's say the project would be $40,000 or $50,000, obviously they'd have to go down into that $103,000. But so if that money wasn't in the budget, sort of like the grants that we might get, there's a $5 million possible grant that we could get. We're not likely we're going to get that. But if that's not in the budget, and we got a $4 million grant that was not in the budget, we wouldn't be able to spend that money. So it's kind of there as a safeguard in case the Youth Council or something for youth would happen and they'd want to use that money, it is there available. I seriously doubt that this council would repeal that particular ordinance locking in that $103,000 to use it for something else. I don't think this council would do that. Could be mistaken, but I don't think they would. So I just wanted to explain that to the public, and if I'm mistaken on any of that, Ms. Buono, correct me, please. Okay. And it's in the LGIP, the Local Government Investment Pool. That's a statewide pool. That's where that $124,000 is at. Any other? Councilmember Klein.
But it's not in parentheses, and I think maybe, you know, in the page 88 of 88 on the budget, it is showing that it will be a transfer.
It would be a transfer if it became necessary to use the money, as I understand it. Ms. Bono, would you want to just address that briefly? I know numbers, but not as well as Sharon.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. When you're looking at page 88 of the budget, you would see at the top it says would be the revenue part, which is the use of the fund balance, which we're actually going to use the term as cash carry forward, like we discussed last time, so we understand what that is. And then the transfer to capital projects would only occur if it was approved by council, and you would have to repeal the ordinance to do that. This is the same amount that we had in last year's budget, because last year I believe that we were looking at using, perhaps the council would like to consider using some of those funds to repair the pool. By leaving that money there, that option is still available to the council, but no transfer will be made unless the ordinance is repealed.
Any other questions or comments from the council?
I have a comment.
Councilmember Sullivan.
Yeah, I've been struggling with that line item as well, and I brought it up at the last budget meeting. And I see it the same way as Ms. Giacomino, in that if it's currently not legal to transfer that, then why would we have it in the budget? Mm-hmm. I would think that we would vote first to repeal the ordinance, and then the following year we'd see it in the budget. And it's obviously making people uncomfortable, and I don't feel comfortable with it. So I just don't see why it's even there. I mean, I understand what you're saying and the process, and it won't be touched unless we were to vote on it, but it still seems like, well, currently our code doesn't allow us to do that, so why would we put it in our budget?
Well, this is not an expenditure. There's a big difference between an expenditure and a budget. The budget is giving you the capacity to spend the money if you would choose. It's not requiring you to do it.
Right.
Basically, what you're doing, when you adopt the tentative budget, what you're setting is your expenditure limitation, which is the grand total all the way at the back that says 20, I believe it's 28,298,000. And of that number, it's possible that you could spend the 55,000 should you choose to do that as a council. Because it's budgeted doesn't mean that it's an expenditure. So I don't believe that this is violating any ordinance because it's not a transaction.
Councilmember Klein.
And I think that we understand that, but I have to agree with Ms. Sullivan that it's kind of, we know why it's there, but it appears like we're putting the cart before the horse. And it is making people a little uncomfortable with that, and I agree. I think if the council wants to vote to repeal it and it goes through, well, then it's done proper and legal, and then we could add it to the next budget. I mean,
you're looking at a two-year process there. If something happened and you could repair the pool, and because it's not budgeted, and you choose to use this money, you don't have to use this money, then you're going to wait for another pool season. So all this is giving you the capability to make a decision should you choose to. It was in last year's budget. It was not used. And, you know, the fact of the matter is also if you want to change it to only the unencumbered funds, unencumbered funds, you know, out of the $124,000, only $103,000 is locked up. So you can spend that other part. So if you're more comfortable with that figure, I can go look it up and we can change it to that figure. Because what you're really concerned about, because you still want, you got another $20,000 that you can spend without violating the ordinance.
Mayor?
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, Mayor, and I was just going to say, you know, if at any point throughout the year, and just really piggybacking on what she said it, you know, really eloquently, at any point throughout the year, if the youth council makes a decision and makes a recommendation to make changes or whatever the case may be, hypothetically speaking, if we're talking about the same $55,000, Mayor and council, you have the ability to go through the budget amendment process and make that requisite change. So it's of no consequence to make the change. We can do that. If you want to reduce it to whatever the interest is or what have you, the difference between the 103 and 124, we can add that. You know, again, this is your budget document. This is just recommended. So whatever changes you all would like to make. And again, so I want to make sure you all keep that in your back pocket, just as a reminder that you all can go through that budget amendment process to make any requisite changes if the youth council makes that recommendation to you all.
Yeah. I will say that when I was in office the other time, there was an expenditure of $10,000 out of the youth fund, but only because the youth council voted for that expenditure. And that's extremely important to me. So, and I'm sure the council agrees that this particular council would not raid that fund for any other purpose. And Lucci would give me a tongue lashing if we did it any different. And so it's really important to allow those children to have, those young people to have a budget to manage, in more or less. And so there is now $21,000 approximately that could be spent on some things for children, or young people, I should say. So that is available. But as I said earlier, and I hate to be redundant, but just let me repeat, if that wasn't into the budget, that $55,000, and the young people of the community or the youth council had recommended to the council to spend $40,000 on a playground or whatever it might be, if that wasn't in there, they couldn't do it. Of course, we'd have to repeal the ordinance. Is that correct, Ms. Bowen?
Yeah, if you attempt to spend any of the 103, right, you have to go through all those processes.
Yeah. I think it's probably a good thing that it's in there, just in case the young people of the community would want to do something. I think there's been a couple more people added to the youth council recently, so hopefully we have a quorum and it's ready to rock and roll, I hope. Any other questions or comments from the council? Councilmember Sullivan.
Thank you, Sharon, for once again clarifying. I do understand why it's in there, and I see that you also moved the color around for me.
Absolutely.
Because I had said that I really wanted to see the pool get fixed this year, and so I wanted to make sure that it does get fixed without the use of the youth fund money. So I would hope that we didn't need to touch even the $21,000 of that unless the youth fund was to vote on it. But I do hope that we can use, if we need to, reserves to fix the pool. I think that's a valuable, a thing that's worth using reserves for.
And that's absolutely at the council's discretion. Absolutely.
Any other comments, questions? We do have a couple more people signed up. Let's now go to Joni Giacomino.
Before I get started, you might want to refer to page 41 of 88 of your budget, because now I'm really confused, because it says fiscal year 2016-17 budget highlight. The budget includes funding only for the operation of the pool. Major repairs are needed to the pool for ADA compliance, which must be addressed this budget year prior to reopening the pool. The repair work is to be funded by the youth fund and require council approval. So it's kind of saying it is, but that's not what I came up here to talk about. I just want to point that out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess mine is more of a history lesson. Many of you haven't been around for the last 15 years since 93. In 1993, when I moved back from Alaska, I started running the Elks Pool. And City Pool had a $75,000 budget for the swimming pool alone. That was not recreation. And I know this only because Tom Wheeler had expressed concern why it was such a big budget when I was running the Elks for a smaller budget. That's a whole other story. Over the many years that have happened, every year the budget gets hit. It's always pool, it's always recreation. When I was a kid in high school, there used to be a recreation center. It's now a gym club. That's where I got my first certification to be a lifeguard back in 1973. They closed the rec center and eventually sold it with a promise to us, the youth of Bisbee, that they would replace the recreation center for somewhere for us to go. Ooh, look, I'm still waiting. No recreation center. So this is what I see with you guys high-grading the youth fund, and that's how I look at it. Because I've already been through this as a kid, and I don't particularly want my kid to go through the same thing we went through as children. Take the money, promise you we're going to give you something, and then nothing goes through. I also have a concern that we're taking the backs of our kids to fix something that should have been fixed years ago. I started running the city pool back in 2002. I came on to the Parks and Rec Department when it was a Parks and Rec Department. That was before Boys and Girls Club came in. That was when I first realized just how unsettling it was for the city when it comes to making cuts, because it's always the children and it's always recreation that gets hit first. When the Boys and Girls Club came in, the city gave the impression that this was a godsend. Oh, we can turn everything over to Boys and Girls Club, which really wasn't fair to Boys and Girls Club because they do not have an infinite number of spaces. So it kind of put a burden on them. It would have been nice if we would have still worked collaboratively with them, because we could have provided our children of the community and the families of the community so much more. Over the years, again, the last 14 years, save one, I've watched the pool budget get cut continually. It's always been, we don't have money. We have every year since 2002 given a list of repairs that needed to be done. And what has happened, they have duct taped goosenecks on sinks. They have gone in and done Band-Aid patchworking. And they have not listened to the things that we said that needed to be done. And now you are at ground zero. 5 to 10 years ago, I don't remember the exact time, Peter Von Gulhoff came in. He asked to give his professional opinion, went up to the pool, told them what they needed, and he kind of got shined on. It's nice to see that Peter's back, because Peter is a professional and he knows what he's doing. Unfortunately, the city has relied on doing a lot of things in-house. And because of that, we have lost our grandfather clause, and that's what I was told this summer by ADQ, I believe, the Department of Water Quality at the state, when they came down. That's one of the issues that we have. I also asked him about the flow rate on the pool, because that's one of the issues. How can the flow rate be improved? One of the ways is to lengthen the flow line, which is one of the things that's been talked about. And I asked him about putting a bigger pump on, and he said, it doesn't matter what size pump you put on, you have 4-inch lines, and it's going to stay the same. We had the offer from the county health department, if we gave them a 3-year plan of improvements showing that we were going to progress and what we were going to do, that they were willing to work with us. I don't know what happened to that, but that was another one of the issues that has fallen. I talked to the professional contractor that the city hired this year, and I was asking him about different things about the pool, and one of them was the ADA compliance. I told him that we had a ramp in our swimming pool that at the time was not there, and that they seemed to feel that we needed to put this chairlift in. And I was told that the ramp was more than adequate, was actually good because it provided for a variety of people. And I have an email that states that our linear size of our swimming pool did not require the secondary chair. So another thing to look at. It's, again, a pleasant surprise to see Mr. Von Gulhoff back in the picture, because he has a validated experience and knowledge for fixing the swimming pool. The swimming pool years ago should have been turned into an enterprise fund. And over the years, 10 years ago, we talked about that. We suggested that. Why isn't it not an enterprise fund? All the funds that come in go straight back into the pool and help offset the cost. Again, we were poo-pooed, and it was pushed off to the side. I read a kind of interesting article the other day in the paper where it said it costs $40,000 in salary to run the swimming pool. And I had to laugh, because that's obviously coming from information that it is inaccurate and unreliable. The last year that I worked for Parks and Rec as a city employee with Carolyn Gonzalez, She managed to keep the cost of the swimming pool about $36,000, and that included everything. That was water, electricity, and you can go back and you can look in your budget and you'll see. So there's no reason why, if it's properly run, that swimming pool can be run at an affordable cost the city could actually budget for and not rely on the children or the people of your community to do fundraisers or to volunteer or to do this and that, which is some of the other conversations I've heard. If you check with your risk management pool, which I heard you already have, you will know that you cannot have volunteers. It's a nightmare for your risk management, and you'll lose your risk management, I can tell you that. You are a municipality. It's too much of a liability. People need to be properly trained. I currently work for the City of Douglas in their aquatics division. They have a specialized person that is trained to do all their maintenance. He's also, I believe, a certified pool and spa operator. And they also have Jennifer Smith, who runs the facility itself. So they have professional people that are certified, that have the qualifications needed to run a pool. One of the other things that I've heard being kicked around is that they want to do an indoor pool. Well, let's just get rid of the old swimming pool. Let's open up a brand new indoor pool. It'll cost you about $1 million a year, if you're lucky, to maintain an indoor pool. That's salaries, that's chlorine, that's the whole enchilada. And that's what it costed 20 years ago when the Cove opened. One of my good friends was running it, and 20 years ago it cost the Cove $1 million to run a year. And once you open the pool, that's not the issue. It's the money pit it becomes once it opens. A pool is not built to make money. A pool is a luxury afforded your community and afforded your children. And you as a city should realize that that's something that you need to budget for and not budget off the backs of everyone else. It's one of those luxuries that if you're lucky, you'll recoup a third of the cost of the swimming pool. And that's generally what is aquatics lingo. If you can recoup a third of your cost, you're doing good. What's the buy-in then for keeping a swimming pool? The first thing that's looked at when people move to a city or when businesses come to a city is what are your schools like and what recreation do you provide? And you can check with any real estate, and they'll tell you that. And right now, we have a gem of a facility that's just sitting there. It's always been the redheaded stepchild. In the 14 years that I've been there, it has never been on schedule. We have always submitted, this is the time we need open, this is what we need done by this, this is what we need done by this. But there's always been other things that have interfered for its opening, which has caused major problems. So until the city really looks at this as a priority instead of a liability, you're not going to really do anything for this pool. You're not going to do anything for your community. You're not going to do anything for the facility. And it will sit there and continue to degrade. Until you take it upon yourselves to budget specifically for this unique feature, it's not going to work. And again, you can't expect your citizens to band together and find funding. That's not their responsibility. You can't expect volunteers, risk pool management nightmare. And the city needs to step up, make it a line item budget, and let the kids and the city have what they need, which is an aquatics facility. There are many ways in which you can get people trained. There are certified pool and spa operator classes where people can go and they can learn how to maintain the pool. You can get people certified in pool management. But until you actually have people that have certificates and have the experience, your pool will never operate like it should. You can go through National Parks and Recreation, and you can see where people have advertised for people to run their swimming pools. And they don't rely on just anyone. And you need to listen to the people that are certified and the people that have the pool building experience, that it can actually validate it when you make your decision. And I really hope that you don't rely on the youth fund. Because that youth fund is there for those kids, not only because it was a donation, but it's to teach them how to be in government. It's for them to help make the decisions. And they did take $10,000 out, and that was to buy the slide. And that was a very hard decision for them. But they wanted the slide. And my last word, I guess, will be that if you do take that money out of the youth fund, you're going to just have a swimming pool for the kids because they're the ones paying for it. It's not fair to them. And that's not the idea for a pool. The pool should be for your community. So.
Thank you, Joni Giacomino. Next, we have Susan Blackford.
Susan
live in Blackford, yada, yada, yada. I promise this is the last I'll be seen up here this evening. As a commissioner, I feel very deeply I needed to go over and understand the budget like I did last year, and it's a learning curve. I had some questions, and the city manager was very gracious to email me and call me personally, and that resolved those small minor questions I had, so I didn't take up any council time, and I appreciate that. Okay, what I can't figure out, where in the budget is the ambulance?
Ms. Buono, would you want to point that $15,000 out, or Mr. Johnson? It's early on.
You can kind of keep talking while I find that for you.
Okay, that's it. For me, that's unbelievable not to have more to say. But, you know, I did the petition. You know the articles. You all approved that we would do an ambulance. And I'll be damned if it can be my problem. I'm not admitting that it's not there. I just couldn't find it. I looked under public safety, fire grants. I couldn't find it. I looked under fire department. I couldn't find it. Now, I believe you have it in there. I'm not questioning that. I just can't find it, y'all.
Ms. Bono, did you want to point that out? Yeah.
Ms. Blackford, if you look on page 14 of the budget, it's in the transfers to debt service for $15,000.
And if I may add, it's right above, I believe, is it $45,000? For two police cars and possibly a city car, because the city cars are getting to the point of...
So if you look right here, see the debt service, we're required by law to transfer it into a debt fund. So we budgeted what we budgeted every year, $15,000 for payments, because I assume...
Well, show me the insurance, please.
Right here. It's right here, okay.
Debt service.
It's for $15,000. That'll cover two payments.
Okay, because it says transfer to debt service, but it's not referenced that it was an ambulance. It's transferred because it's for the ambulance.
It doesn't say that, because if we're transferring the dollars to make the payment, it's not approved by council. Okay? So we would have to go through the council process. And then debt service goes all the way into, this is upper level accounting, governmental accounting. Graduate level. And then if you go to your debt service, which I believe is fund 85 or 86, there is just $1 amount in there for vehicles. And so that allocation of vehicles would be decided by the city council.
Okay, so that 85 and 86, no problem. It's
okay, let me show you.
So that's right. Just show me. And I think it's good for the council to know to make sure it's in there, too.
And all of this is, you know, when we bring forth contracts to council, this is what we tell them, because when you do, it's fund 85 is a debt service fund, okay, and it's also go into the capital fund.
Mayor, if it'll be appropriate, I'd be more than happy to schedule some time with Ms. Blackford so that we can walk through the budget, so that, you know, we can sort of move things along, if that's okay, similar to what I did on yesterday. I'd be more than happy to do that for you.
I appreciate your kindness. You showed me kindness the other day, but I think this is real important for everybody to know. I'm sorry if you think I'm wasting everybody's time, but it's been an issue for an ambulance for the last 3 years, and based on what the council has said, that we were going to do it. Now, granted, I'm not sophisticated like Sharon to understand all the budget. I'm just looking for a line that says it's for ambulance.
And you will not find the line that says ambulance. What you will find is on page 88, it's the very last page, Susan. If you go to the very last color-coded page, and if you didn't print in color.
I don't have a color.
Okay. And that line item right here, and I can show it to you
right here.
Equipment/vehicle, we have budgeted $55,000.
So, okay, let me just reiterate, and just so I can explain it in my own words, and I'll leave the podium then. The $55,000, if they approve the budget, will go towards the purchase of an ambulance.
No, $55,000 is slotted, available for the council to use. It's in the budget. The council has to approve what vehicles. They can buy other vehicles. It's at their discretion. But we did account for taking $15,000 out of the general fund, transfer into the debt service fund to make a payment for 1 year for an ambulance.
Okay. Okay, so
if the council approves it, but only I can't make, as your finance director, I cannot make any assumptions.
Correct.
That the council is going to approve anything is totally within there, but we give them the mechanism to do it, and that's what a budget is.
I understand that, because you have to have that before you can make an approval with that. So that makes sense. So then it's all up to you all to talk over with the fire chief and keep your word that you have that you will go ahead and purchase another ambulance. And I just wanted to have you all on the record.
You're very welcome here.
I will say this. A couple of weeks ago, the city manager gave me a call and said, Mayor, you want to spend a Sunday afternoon going over the budget? And I said, well, that sounds like a fun thing to do. So that's what we did. And the first question when I came in was, where's the money for the ambulance? That was the first question I asked. He said, right there, Mayor, it's on page 14. So I think everybody understands it's allocated to be spent, but council would have to approve the purchase of that ambulance, which I think, I think is extremely necessary. It's a revenue, massive revenue generator, and better than some of those older ones they're using. So it is in the budget, Ms. Blackford, and I'm glad that you're interested in seeing that type of stuff. It's really super important. Any other, that concludes the people, I believe, signed up for that subject matter. So we will now finalize any questions from the council on the tentative budget. Council Member Sullivan first.
Thank you. Since we have Ms. Luria here, I was wondering if we could go over some of the line items in the visitor center budget. I just had a couple of questions. First of all, the part-time salary, is that pretty much what we voted on to do with the annex and the museum? The $9,641. Okay. And then I see we have $3,000 for business travel and another $7,000 for business travel overnight destination. So it's $10,000 for business travel. And where will you be traveling?
For example, July 11th through 13th is the governor's conference for Arizona Office of Tourism, which is in Tucson, luckily. But the cost of the event to attend is $300 plus room, plus some travel expenses. We also participated in the Tucson Bridal Expo in January to help bring a different market down here. So again, another few hundred dollars for that event. There's the KJZZ Travel Expo in November. Again, a few hundred dollars to participate, to have a booth to represent Bisbee. The Phoenix Pride is in April. We participated this past year the very first time. Huge success. And then again, the Tucson Pride, which is in October. So all these little events that we've never been able to really attend, we've had such good response that we thought we'd try that again. So
they're all in Arizona?
So far, yeah.
Okay.
There's one with part of the AOT marketing cooperative that I just got today. I saw there's one in San Diego and one in L.A., but don't know. We haven't researched that yet.
Okay. All right. Just seemed a little high to me.
Mm-hmm. I think we want some flexibility. We didn't have that before, so we weren't able to attend any.
Uh-huh.
Or that as many that we wanted to.
Okay. So as far as the overnight destination, it's a campaign, right? It's a specific campaign. It's trying to promote Bisbee as an overnight destination. Because we have specific money in the budget. What is it? It is... just for advertising, $25,000 just for that campaign, plus another $50,000 for regular advertising. And then it just seems like a lot for this one campaign. And I totally support, promoting tourism, but I was wondering if you could go into detail on where the money is going.
Sure. So again, $50,000 is usually what's always been budgeted for advertising, and that's just to market just general across the board. But for the extra $25,000 would be for that extra 1% tax from the bed tax.
Mm-hmm.
And again, anytime we would, encourage it's an overnight stay specifically in that campaign is where that money would be. It would be paid through that line item.
So is there a billboard or something like that?
It will be happening itself.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was wondering was, you know, where can we expect to see that?
It's new. They haven't done this before and had it separated out as a line item like this, but we're trying to make it so there's a separation so you can see where it's being spent. So this is new for this budget.
Okay. All right. I think that's all my questions on the visitor center. Thanks.
Ms. Lurie, thank you. Any other questions or comments from Councilmember Klein? Sorry about that.
Just a couple. The first one is for Ms. Bono. And when we went over the revenue and all of that, I noticed that the HERF funds were not put in there. Where were they put? Where is she?
Councilman Klein, she was waiting. We're waiting for the state to give us an official number and not an estimate. So the HERF funds, the state always gives you an estimate on what you're going to get for all your collected funds. So if she didn't get it in there, the only reason it is because we haven't gotten a firm number from the state. We just got our estimate.
Okay, but we have estimates for vehicle license tax,
and I don't know why she wouldn't have put it in there. She'll be back in a minute. She's printing out some other stuff, so but that would be the only reason it would be later delayed.
Because everything else is a guess as well,
yeah.
Or just a rough estimate, as far as state income tax, state sales tax,
right,
the vehicle license, and HERF, yeah. But I could not find it in.
I think.
No. It's on page.
See, I don't see it.
I'm sorry, I was getting
Councilmember Klein
for you in case you needed it.
Okay. The city manager.
Mr. Johnson, city manager.
I just wanted to point out on page 58 of 88, at the very top, let's say HERF gas tax. Okay. On that very on the very very top line there. The 385-188.
Okay. I was just, I could not find it when, where we had revenue at the very beginning of the budget. That's why I wanted to know.
Are you talking about the transfer, the change there that we did?
No, she was just wanting to know where the HERF funds were being recognized.
Were,
and so we were just pointing out on what page it was identified at the top of page 58, as opposed to the front, very first couple of pages on the revenue line. So, but that was the question. I just wanted to point that out. That's okay.
Okay. I just didn't know, because you have everything else listed, but I didn't see the HERF funds listed there.
Right. Well, the sales tax increase of 1%, the HERF is on the very first one, page 58, and then the sales tax increase of 1%, which is the second one up from the bottom one on the revenue, because that's an actual transfer from the sales tax. That is not HERF money.
Right.
Right, okay.
No, I didn't know why it was not listed on page one under revenue.
Oh, okay.
That was my question.
It was a transfer out. And if you look in 55, which is page 14, okay, are we there on page 14?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Peter, thank you. Are you with me? Okay, so go up to the transfer to streets. It's
okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 up from the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're dealing with this fund, the AG&G, which is your administrative overhead, this is where all the transfers in and out of the general fund come from. And so we show them here as it's transferring out. So that should be a grand total, and it should feed right into 21. And it does. It's right there. If you, on page 14, transfer to streets, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The seventh line up from the bottom is we budgeted transfer to street $703,000. Mm-hmm. And then when you go back to page 58, you'll see it. Sales tax increase, the second one from the bottom under revenue, of $703,000. That's how it flows through.
How HERF does?
Not HERF.
Okay, no, that was my question on HERF.
Okay.
Strictly on HERF. That's
HERF goes directly in. So that first line, at HERF gas tax, that goes directly in to Fund 21. That never passes through the general fund.
Okay, so that's why it's not listed on page one under revenue.
Correct.
Okay, that was my question.
And when I was looking at it, and then the other transfer is the sales tax increase that's dedicated to streets. So that's how come it's split up. One goes to the general fund, one goes directly into the fund. And it's kind of, that's okay. We'll just leave it like that.
Okay. Councilmember Klein.
Okay, and then the other question I have is, one of the highlights on the presentation was under the fire department, and it says, as with all departments, they will realize an increase in health insurance. But it was only, kind of highlighted there. But my question is, why haven't we had a presentation on insurance like we generally do, so we know what the increases are, or, and did we go out to bid like we do every year?
We did. Our open enrollment period is June 9th, and so I think last year we did it about 3 weeks prior to open enrollment. So we'll look to go ahead and have them. My date may be off. I'm not complete. I thought it was a couple weeks before open enrollment, which is June 9th. So realistically, I think the second meeting in June would be a realistic time frame for them to come down and do that formal presentation. But you are correct. In years past, we did have that presentation, especially at least on last year. I remember we did.
But if we are going to have an increase, it kind of would have been nice to have it prior to
sure.
figures being plugged in. And then as so that leads to the other question of personnel director, that it was, the decision was made to hire an executive assistant. So then who is handling our HR duties?
I handle the HR duties. The main HR responsibilities, the day-to-day HR responsibilities, mm-hmm. Filling out forms, enrolling employees, new hire paperwork, things of that nature. The executive assistant handles those responsibilities.
Okay, so because typically the HR would handle all of our insurance and all of that.
And if you recall, we one of the things that was discussed was that with when Cindy left, we transitioned those responsibilities specific to payroll and benefits to finance, and that's one of the main responsibilities of our new accountant that's in the department. And so she interfaces directly with our insurance broker, which is CBIZ.
Okay, so then we will be having presentations by CBIZ then?
Absolutely. And it was an oversight on my part by not scheduling them to come on down prior to the budget discussions, but it'd be relatively easy to have them come down and do that presentation for mayor and council. And one of the big things on last year that we wanted to make sure that mayor and council was aware of was the fact that we were changing our insurance carrier from HealthNet to United Healthcare. So that was one of the big things from last year that we wanted to make sure you all were aware of. But it's not an issue to have them come down and do a presentation for you all.
Okay. And then I've got one more question.
Sure.
And I know we've talked about this for years, but in looking at the fire department uniforms and the police department uniforms, there's always, because I think years, many, many, many years ago, they were pretty even. And then the fire department got their uniform budget slashed significantly. And so we still have a $5,900 difference where the PD has $13,500 and fire has only $7,600. Is there some way we can shift things around so it's a little more even, considering that Chief's given me a funny look. He's probably going to talk to me after the meeting. But considering we have quite a, you know, we have more firefighters at this point than we do police officers. So is there some way to make it a little more equitable?
That is certainly the pleasure of Mayor and Council. If you all want to see that happen, Chief, you heard where that came from. But I think one of the things that that Chief Achave did point out was that the officers were using a different, not dress blue, I'm thinking the Air Force days, but a different weight of uniform depending on the time of year. And that was one of the things. We just have some chatter in the audience. It's kind of throwing me off a little bit. But it, because of the different weight of the uniforms in the police department, that's one of the things that the chief did express to me in years past, is a long sleeve, shorter sleeve, et cetera, different weight with pants and things of that nature. So I know in years past that, and if you correct me if I'm wrong, in years past, there's a different type of pant, from almost like a BDU pant versus a different type of dress blue pant that the department had actually used before. So.
Okay. Well, yeah, the fire department also has their dress uniforms as well as, you know, BDUs, yeah. So they can carry all their, medical gear in their pockets and things like that. And then this question is for Ms. Bono. The way that they were receiving their uniform allowance, the fire department, they were being taxed on it. Has that been changed? Has that been corrected?
No, actually, that's correct. I think after the IRS audit that I went through that paperwork that they had, and the city was fined some of those things. It's required. I believe that when they take it through their paycheck, it's taxable. And I can get back to you on it, but they fixed that. IRS came in, made a ruling, and since that happened, it's been done proper. So I need to take another look at it.
Okay, so then why are they the only department then in the city that are taxed on their uniforms?
Because they the need to run it through their payroll and not do it reimbursable, Ms. Klein. That's what I believe. I can follow up, but they choose to do it. It's my understanding, Chief Bernalite, unless you want to address that the fire department has elected to take it through their paycheck and not on a reimbursable basis.
We were trying to change that this year to go for the voucher system because of that particular issue. Something that we were bringing up and trying to express to staff.
Okay. We didn't account for it in this budget that way, and I haven't been approached with it, but that doesn't mean it can't change. Mm-hmm. The fire department gets they pull their draws twice a year. So the next draw will be in January, so we can look at it that way.
Okay, because I don't think that it should, go the way it is, because it shows up as income, mm-hmm. and they are taxed, and they are the only department in the city that is doing it that way. So I kind of would like it to be.
And I think a lot of that with the IRS is that they're not required to provide receipts. We give them the money. With the police department, they're required to provide itemized receipts. So those, we've documented that they've actually spent the money on that item. So maybe that's what the difference is in the IRS ruling.
So maybe we could look at that.
Absolutely.
Councilwoman Klein, I just want to make sure I'm clear. So we're balancing out the uniform expense for both police and fire to make it even between both departments, just so I'm clear. Right?
I would like to see that. I mean, generally that's what okay. a lot of cities will do is mm-hmm. I mean, even Mr. Temby will tell you that it's like whatever, the officers, how they run it, that's, public safety. So they would be treated the same.
Okay.
So that's the only reason I'm questioning it.
Okay.
Well, it seems to me that there had to be a reason there's a difference of that magnitude. Maybe that's a valid amount that it is right now. I don't know. I'm just asking. I don't know.
It's Chief Achave. It's my understanding that we do not have, I think our labor agreements are expired, and the city has been honoring them. As far as you know, reimbursements and things of that nature. So, you know, that can always be looked at that time, too.
So when the rule changed, years ago, we all got checks separate for our clothing allowance. When the rule changed, we were given the option to either get it in a check form and be taxed, or we could spend, turn in a receipt, and get reimbursed at the face value of the receipt. We chose at that time, as a department, to do it that way, and also to reach out to a couple vendors in Tucson that are under Tucson Police Department's contract, where we could go directly to them, purchase what we need, and have the city pay them and kind of remove ourselves from that. And that allows us to get it without being taxed. If we were to take it taxed, then, or if we were to take the check up front, then ours would be taxed as well. But we chose not to do that. We chose the reimbursement.
Well, let me ask, if your uniform item in that line item is reduced, is that going to do damage to your staff?
It does, because as the city manager kind of hinted to, in a normal situation, when we're at normal staffing, every officer is required to wear their Class B uniform, which is the button-down gold name tag, badge, the more professional-looking uniform. And the uniforms, unfortunately, you know, they're over $100 a set. If they choose to wear the polo shirt and the BDU-type pants in the evening, they can do that. But that's the uniforms are pricey. Most of them will tell you, and I'm sure the fire department's the same way, they'll tell you that they don't get enough to pay for all the things that they buy to come to work. We just don't. Some of those things we have to pay out of pocket. Some officers do that. Some officers just go without. But that is, we used to get $1,500 per officer for the year, and that was reduced a few budgets to go down to $1,000.
I saw that Chief Bernalite is edging up closer to the podium. they're very close friends, I'm sure.
Good evening. Through some of the work sessions with Mr. Johnson, and we took it to our union members, and in the past we have taken, we've had a lot of turnover in the fire department over the last few years, and so we took it back to the body, and they would like to change the way that they get their uniform allowance to be more like the police department. Have it in a voucher system so that the money is taken out. They would have to itemize their purchases as well, show receipts, try to have some scheduled vendors that would bill directly to the city so that everything is specifically for uniform allowance. In the past, people would take their uniform allowance as an extra check, as an extra income, and it wouldn't always go toward uniforms. But as the department is growing now and we have more need of other special type of equipment and uniform needs, this would be a lot more beneficial to the whole department overall. So something we would request to be considered.
Okay. Councilmember Klein, are you satisfied with a 50-50 split on that? What do you want?
I'm just questioning. I would just like it a little more equitable.
Well, you know, they do have the option of Chief Bernalette will just have to come up with the extra dollars within his own budget to cover that. So he would have to have savings somewhere else. And then we can look at the dollar amount per uniform. When you go to that system, it's not a voucher system. What it is we're part of the co-op of the city of Tucson. There's two stores up there that's been awarded the bid for police uniforms. We set up accounts in those two stores. Officers can go up there, purchase what they require. We're billed directly. There's no voucher system. So they would have to find that. So if the fire department wishes to move to that, we can do that. But it's either going to be reimbursable or they've got to find a place and we have to find the bid. And they'll have to either bill us directly or provide us with receipts. Even some of our police officers don't get everything at those two places. They get reimbursed. Some of them like their shoes, different, things of that nature.
Well, possibly Chief Bernalite and the city manager could find some adjustments in the fire department budget, but I was with the city manager before this council session, and it's kind of been picked over to get those turnouts. And so I'm not sure if there's much maneuverability in the fire department budget on that. That would be a difficult thing. What are we talking about? Another 7,000, perhaps, Ms. Klein?
I don't know. Oh. I'm just asking. Chief, what do we provide for the firefighters per uniform allowance?
Actually, we did increase that line item slightly this year to get to the 7,600. I believe it it came in at a 6,750 the year before. So that worked out to a little under $400 per firefighter. Again, that was put in the payroll, so it came out taxed. So in the two installments, it was less than $200. Per man, so if you gotta buy a lot of stuff with that, your pants, your shirts, boots, hats, but it's all clothing. We don't have quite the need that the police department have, but again, if we went to the system, all the monies would be toward the clothing, and that's what we would like to assure the firefighters.
Okay, so it's $400 per firefighter, but with it being taxed, you said it comes out to about $200?
Well, in the two installments.
$200 per installment. Okay, and then the police officers are getting $1,000 per uniform. So, I mean, there's a big discrepancy. And I'm not saying that they're not both needed, because we do need uniforms for both of them. But when you have, you know, one department getting $400 per person and another department getting $1,000 per person, I just would like to see it a little more equitable.
Well, the good news is we've got their turnouts, which is part of their uniform, and that's in there, so the important part is covered.
Yes, and that is when they go out to a fire, but that's not, that's specialized gear. That's not part of their uniform.
That's personal protective equipment. So.
Councilmember Dowdy.
Chief, do you buy them locally or online, or where do you buy them?
We do have for our station shirts, we use Serendipities in Sierra Vista. And then as far as the uniform pant, it can come from a couple different vendors. There's 5-Eleven in Galls, which are national companies, as well as there is a uniform company in Tucson called Jerry's, where some of the people have shopped. And then Class A shirts, which is our dress uniform, they come from Tucson Company.
Thank you.
Councilmember Hansen.
How much does it cost to outfit a firefighter?
An initial uniform allowance doesn't quite cover for when a new firefighter comes in. They have to buy a minimum, usually of three duty shirts, short sleeve, the same with the pants. Pants are about $85 a pair. Shirts are running $25. So when you're just getting that initial allowance of $200, the guys are putting in some of their own money. And then purchases are made all throughout the year because stuff wears, tears, breaks down.
And Chief and Chevy, what would be the cost for to deck out a police officer?
To deck out.
Again, we wear the Flying Cross, our professional uniform, the polyester pants. The polyester pants vary from anywhere between $40 and $80 a pair. The shirts run generally between $50 and $60 a shirt, depending on long sleeve or short sleeve. And then on top of that, the officer is responsible for purchasing the leather gear and all the stuff associated with that as well. So
Do you have an estimate on how much that would be for?
For that, off the top of my head, I couldn't come up with that. But it's, I mean, it's, it'd probably be, if not more, at least close to $200 by the time you buy the belt, the keepers, the holster, the mag pouch, the cupcake, you know, and all the things that go with it. It all adds up.
Yeah, I'm just trying to determine if there's more of a cost when you get somebody in for an initial uniform expenditure between the police and the firefighter.
Right.
That's what I'm looking for.
And like I said, you know, with the money we get, it's spent, and most officers, by the end of the year, their money has been spent and they're dipping into the pocket to get what they need to get to finish the year off.
So both departments are in that situation?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, sure.
Thank you.
Well, I don't want a situation where departments are necessarily competing against each other for clothes. However, we are dramatically reduced in the police department personnel. Does that have an effect on the clothing allowance? And then one follow-up question. Now, the intergovernmental agreement that we signed with Cochise County, will they be wearing City Bisbee police clothes during that, their cruising here?
So during the time when the Sheriff's Department comes to back, so they will not be. They will be in their own uniforms, okay, and their own gear provided by their department.
Okay.
And I apologize. Can you ask the first part of that one more time, please?
Is the Sheriff's Department going to be wearing the sheriff's uniform or the local police uniform?
Right. No, they'll be in their uniform.
Their sheriff's uniforms. Okay.
And as far as the as far as the clothing allowance for all the shortfalls that we have, those officers as they come in, one uniform is going to get them. You know, you're talking anywhere between $100 and $150 for that uniform. And when they come in and on the field training, they're going to be working 40 hours a week, and they can't do it with less than with only one or two uniforms. I mean, you have to have more because things happen throughout your shift. You get pants snagged, ripped. You get dirty. They need time to be washed. So you have to have, you can't just go to work with one uniform or even two uniforms really. You have to have several. You have to have all your gear purchased up front before you graduate the academy. So there's a huge cost to those cadets as they start the academy. The problem is sometimes these cadets are filling a position for somebody who's already used their clothing allowance. Somebody who retired or has left us to go to another agency, they've used their allotted clothing allowance. They've now left. We hire somebody to take their spot, and now there's no clothing allowance money left for this new hire coming in because the other officer used it before they got there. That's where we get into some difficult situations because our paychecks, they're not really, really big, and it makes it difficult for an officer to have to buy those uniforms and buy all the equipment associated with it up front without being reimbursed.
Thank you. I don't want to get into a competition between the police and fire department over clothes. I really don't want to do that. But I think we need to, if we can, find another $7,000 or so for the fire department clothes. Is that possible, Ms. Blono?
Well, he'll have to find it within his budget,
okay.
Fire department. Another thing to keep in mind is if they decide to make the change, it's prorated. So it won't be automatic. So when new officers or new personnel come on, we take the allotted share, we divide it by the number of months, and we provide that. So it's not like everyone walks in and gets the max amount. It's prorated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's available to them. Now, if they don't use the funds, it does not carry forward.
Mayor and Council, and one of the things I certainly want to point out, you know, we honored as close as we can, or we could, the budget request by the department. And so, you know, knowing that we were going to move forward with the turnouts, you know, I really believe there's an opportunity in next year's budget or subsequent year's budgets to replace or fund the fire department to a level that may be more appropriate if you all choose not to make any changes this year or not. But, you know, the important thing this year was to try our best to try to get those turnouts replaced. And I know that's a life safety issue right now.
Yeah.
So I think we might be okay. Chief, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, we might be okay this year as it relates to the uniform allowance that we have right now. But the most important thing this year was to try, and that's $21,000 that I got to make my case, you know, that's $21,000 dedicated to some life safety equipment that they sorely need. And so we have the opportunity in subsequent years' budgets to replace that, because we're not worrying about, you know, turnouts that should have been replaced 15 or 17 years ago.
Yeah.
So, well, that was purchased 15 or 17 years
ago. Well, I appreciate your efforts in finding those rearrangements in the fire department budget for those turnouts. I know that was probably very complicated to a certain degree. Councilmember Klein.
And I appreciate that, and please don't think that I don't. I do. I just wanted to bring out the difference in, you know, they're both public safety departments. They both have specialized equipment. I was just wondering why, you know, we have one, and if we couldn't get that conversation started as far as using the same system that the police department does to make it a little more equitable for the firefighters.
Yes,
that was my point.
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sullivan.
May I change back to another topic? Are we done with that topic?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks. For Ms. Bono, I'm curious on the fund 99, back to the capital improvements, and back to the visitor center budget. We've got a $50,000 transfer coming in from the visitor center. And then under the expenditures, it just says visitor center bed tax increase. So I was curious what that means as far as an expense.
I'm looking for the colors. That's the time I put them in here.
It's non-colored.
Oh, no. I believe that this is, it's white. I see it. I believe that this was the bathrooms that, Mr. Johnson, if you'd like to address that.
Sure. I mean, that's just, again, a placeholder. If, in fact, the mayor and council wants to move forward with any type of capital project, specifically the improvements to the visitor center to have a more permanent fixture in a more visible location in front of where the museum is, and essentially that's a placeholder for that, if that's something that you all wish to do going forward. But it's up to you.
Okay, yeah, it just wasn't labeled. It just says visitor center bed tax increase.
And we really wanted to identify, you know, an initiative, a project to make sure we make good use of the funds that we asked the voters for. And so, you know, in the last year, we wanted to, again, you know, promote Bisbee as an overnight destination, and we went through the branding initiative. You know, going forward, hey, what other opportunities or initiatives or projects do we really need to take a look at and consider specific to this particular pot of money that the voters said, hey, look, we need to do something as it relates to tourism in our community. So
we have a 6-year sunset on that?
I believe it was 4 years, Sullivan. Also, when you look at the visitor center budget, one thing I'd like to point out, and I worked closely with Jen on this and Mr. Johnson, it's page 56, is you're going to see duplicate. Anything that is the overnight destination codes, we've broken those out so I can run reports over the span of the 4 years. Because what's going to happen year two, you're going to ask, year three, you're going to ask. So we've broken that out, and Jen is responsible for charging to the correct places based on that. So that's how you'll see that. In the transfer to the capital projects, and you'll see here it's overnight, it's at $50,000. That's only a transfer. These transfers don't automatically take place. It's only if it's approved by council to go ahead with a major project like that. Because what happens is when you build a bathroom, it's a major improvement to the value of our city, and I'm required to put it into 99 and book it as such.
So the 1% bed tax, is that supposed to be solely for overnight destination or just visitor center in general?
That 1% is solely overnight destination.
Okay. Because as far as those line items that are allotted specifically to the overnight destination, there's $52,500, whereas we only have $42,855 coming in projected.
Correct, because the projection really is a guesstimation of what it's going to be. So when they were building the budget, there's other things that I think they were going to bring back through some of the committees to come up with a hard plan. So this is just numbers that they think they're going to spend. And if not, remember, it just rolls over the cash carry forward to spend it the next year. So even if the expense doesn't equal what we budgeted there, because we don't know that that's what's going to happen. So I'm going to be able to run reports to track that, because they should be probably carried over from last year to cash carry forward.
I know, but that just doesn't make sense to over budget like almost $10,000 when we are expecting only, you know, the 42. I just don't understand that, especially when we're already pulling out 71 from the cash carry forward.
Correct. Again, what I can say is since it wasn't tracked to a specific project.
Well, but the 1% is tracked to a specific project, so if we're projecting...
Well, that's cash coming in, but you're talking about we've over-expended is what you're telling me here. You think we've over-budgeted expenditures and...
For that particular...
line item.
Yeah, for the overnight destination.
Okay, so then those expenditures wouldn't be taken. I think we couldn't tie it all the way down because it wasn't a specific project that has come through that we're doing. So I think that's why the 10,000. Be kind of just grab some numbers. What do you think you're going to do? What do you think you're going to take to the IBISB committee? Where are you going with this money? We need to develop a plan on how to spend these tax dollars. And if that's off, you know, I apologize for that. We just got it to where she thought we were going to spend the money. And it's obviously $10,000 off. But we're not going to pull from the cash carry forward. And because the only way, if we spent everything for everything. So I apologize for that, but we need to get some solid projects going.
Any other questions?
I do have, not so much a question.
Councilmember Klein.
But Ms. Bono, would you, for the public, explain from page 88, the use of reserves. Again, I know we do this all the time, but you still get people that will question because we were told we're not using reserves, and yet it is right there in purple, you know, use of reserves. And I see, we see the color coordination, but the public doesn't always see that, where it says use of reserves for $550,000. We can see that it correlates down here, but can you explain why it's put in there?
There is a balance that you have. This is a capital outlay fund. We have an ordinance that says that whenever you sell property, that this money goes into this fund. So what happens is the balance grows. So you have a balance in that fund, and I can't think off the top of my head how much it is. It's more than that. That if you choose to spend out everything in our capital to build, then that's where the money would come from. A lot of the transfers that you see in and out are specific projects that would come from the Queen Mine. If the Queen Mine had to do all of that stuff that he budgets for, then it would transfer into capital to be booked properly. But it would come from the Queen Mine. So if we decide to purchase the vehicles, okay, if I'm not transferring that $55,000 from the general fund, it's going to come from your cash carry forward. Thank you, Mr. Hanson, for that word. It makes it easier to understand. So that's what we do. We budget this using the cash carry forward. There are a couple things, and I guess this is the time for me to put this out about the cooling system, sir. We have budgeted $350,000 for the heating and cooling in this building. We are coming back to you, asking you to approve us applying for a loan. USDA and Mr. Heratic has talked to them. They will give us a loan to fix City Hall, the fire department roofs, the library, and we can go on. But I put the project in because it needs to be done. That doesn't mean we're going to pay them cash. we're going to see if we can finance it. So that's why this has to balance out to the use of reserves. Because I can't budget debt service without coming before council. What I'm telling you is we have to fix this building. This has to be the priority this year. This is our year four. We don't have the cash to pay $350,000 out. We're going to come to you and ask you, can we finance it? And we're going to do it project by project. Both of our fire departments, they have new roofs. It has to be done. We have to start maintaining. So this is why I'm budgeting with a cash carry forward to identify the projects to the council, which needs to be done. Then at that point, we can decide whether or not we want to finance it or pay for it. And if you want to pay for it right out and not finance it, I think it's I believe Mr. Raddick at 2% financing, then we'll have to pull from the reserves because we can't transfer $350,000 from the general fund. So the way it's budgeted is to allow the council enough flexibility to make decisions that they want to carry forward. I can only put it there for you to give you options to use.
And thank you for explaining that. Like I said, we can see
the color.
But the public can't. And, you know, they question, well, we saw where you're not using the reserves, but it says right there you're using reserves.
This is not
but you can't
fund.
Always, right, but you can't always explain that.
Yeah.
Or at least I can't in terms of a finance director, so thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions from the council?
Just on that note, I do support getting a loan for fixing City Hall and the roofs and everything. And I think at the top of that project list is also the city pool refurbish. I think it should be a part of those, you know, capital investments that need to be fixed.
And that's absolutely part of it. You know, that's the flexibility that you guys have as a council is to make those decisions and move forward.
Well, I think with all those various projects, I thought I must be mistaken, the fire department roof was covered by insurance, but apparently it wasn't. I don't know.
No, I've had them. I had them out there on the library's roof twice, the fire department, I think, twice, too. And it's not. We need to replace those roofs.
So it seems to me, obviously, this will come up soon, I would imagine. Dealing with about $500,000, maybe more. Is that a fair analysis of that?
I believe that's a close amount, but you know we can't request USDA to come forward without talking to our council. So it's in the budget because we're telling you we think this needs to be done, and then we'll come forward. That doesn't mean we're going to spend it. But if we choose the pools in there too, I mean, there's a lot of financing opportunities that if you wish to take advantage of that.
Mr. Johnson,
City Manager.
Thank you, Mayor, and I apologize for taking up too much time on this. As it relates to the pool, one thing I want to be very, very clear about, it's not that the pool never was a priority. It always has been a priority. The reality is who was going to operate the pool this year because we did not have an operator as we did last year, which made the priority of let's go ahead and fix it this year because we had no one to operate the pool. And just for the public's knowledge, LEAP managed the pool program for us on last year and the year before that, and I believe maybe for the last 3 years. There was no operator of the pool, and when it's stated that you know improvements have not been made over the pool, I mean, I challenge anyone, if you want to do a public records request or whatever the case may be, to see what improvements have been made at the pool, at least for the last 2 years. We'll be more than happy to provide that information. So when the comments are made, you know, improvements need to be made to the pool, where's the money coming from, yada, yada, yada. One of the most important things is who was going to operate and manage the pool. So I want to be very, very clear about that particular. I know it's a very sensitive issue on so many levels, and it should be, but I just want to make that very, very clear and throw that out as well.
Let me add this quick item. I think it was last September. I did not know this budget would come out this well. I thought we was going to be in the drink big time, so I really appreciate this particular budget. However, we have pool issue, we have building issues, our buildings need to be maintained or they're going to lose their value and then it becomes even more expensive, et cetera. But anyway, last September, I mentioned about a half-cent sales tax increase. I was afraid we was going to lose some services, and I brought that up, and of course I was getting beat over the head for that, but you know that's what I do. If you want these services, you want your municipal properties maintained, whatever they are, including the pool, it's you have to pay for them, because I don't really see any money in this particular budget. It's not possible unless you want to get rid of complete departments, essentially, is what we're dealing with, and we don't want that. So I you know, it's too late to have it on the general election ballot this year. It has to go into a general election ballot. So I believe, correct me if I'm mistaken, Ms. Coronado, this couldn't even happen for two more years. Is that correct? Till 2018, is that correct? A sales tax increase. That's what I understood. It had to go into a general election.
It would have to go in a general election.
But that's every 2 years. Okay, well, we're having one this year, but I'm sure it's too late to get it on, work with the county to get that on the ballot.
Not necessarily.
Okay. Enough. Well, that's something the council might want to think about. But a half-cent sales tax generates about $350,000. Bingo, you got the pool fixed and it's open. You got the buildings maintained. But this is for the public to decide. Obviously, they're going to make the decision on that. I mean, I don't know really any other solution, so it's something the council might want to think about. Sometimes you have to be a little bit brave because nobody likes sales tax increases, but half a cent, but we already just had 1 cent, so the public, obviously, I'll probably get beat up even mentioning this, I'm sure, but I think it's my obligation to bring that also as another option that the council and the voters in the community have to maintain their community buildings and have a pool that's open. So I remember a couple of years ago I did support the 1 cent sales tax for streets, and various places that I went, I just put it to the people, and I said, it's up to you. If you want to drive on good streets, you got to pay for it. If you don't want to drive on good streets, don't vote for it. And so it's your decision to make. So instead of this being foisted on the council, I think maybe I'll try to foist it on the public. What do you all want? So I probably think that would be necessary at some point in time, because I just don't see the state shared revenues and the various taxes that come into this budget is going to finance all these various things, and I really don't like debt, because it's actually more debt and it's interest on that. So it's something the council might want to think about. Yeah. Council Member Klein.
Just for clarification, I don't think that Ms. Giacomino was saying that this particular administration or whatever, she was going back to 93 when the budget of the pool was $75,000, and that's in our records here. And if we look now, our budget is now only $19,100. I think that's what she was talking about, that over the years, it hasn't been a priority. And it's true, from when the rec center was sold, you know, and of course, that was long before any of us were up here. But, yeah, I was a kid when that happened as well, and the youth was promised. And the money, you know, the funds went away. And, I mean, I used to do my winter swim there as well. And you know, we had the winter swim in the rec center, which is now the gym club. And we had our summer swim at the pool now. And it was great. But there was a lot for us to do back then, you know, and there isn't now. And I think that's what she was getting at, that, you know, we were promised as kids, and here we are, and we still don't have them. And I think that's what she was meaning to say, that, and it shows when you keep chopping it at a certain budget that it really isn't a priority.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from the council? Let me ask this. Did we get that uniform situation pretty much understood and settled? Everybody's looking away. Are we going to balance it out? What do you think, Councilmember Klein? You brought it up.
I just wanted to bring up the conversation, just so we can get the conversation started.
Okay.
Okay,
we have the conversation started, but once we approve the tentative budget, then it's capped, and we can still move stuff around in there. Am I correct, Ms. Bono? We can still move it around, but we can't go over that limit.
Correct. Yeah. You can overspend that line item, and you just need to understand other line items. And when the auditors present to you, they will give you a report, as they do every year, any department that's gone over their budget. And then you look at it. Some of them are some small, and you'll have the opportunity at that time to question that. And we'll have this resolved by next year, the allocations. Some important decisions will be made about our fire department by then, and we can get that, you know, equalized.
So I hope... And staff has some direction on, especially those uniforms. So I guess we'll have to maybe do a slight rearrangement in those? Yes? Okay.
Well, that's, we can have that conversation later.
Yeah, we can.
I mean, I know, and I think everybody knows that, you know, once we adopt the tentative, the bottom line is the bottom line. We
right.
can't go over it, but we still have some wiggle room within.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Is there any more questions or comments from the council? Well, let's, do we have a motion?
I move that we approve Resolution R-16-04, adopting the tentative budget for fiscal year 2016 through 2017.
Second.
Second.
We have a motion, a second, to approve Resolution R-16-04, adopting the tentative budget for fiscal year 2016-2017. Ms. Coronado, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Doughty?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Sullivan?
Aye.
Mayor Erdley?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Ms. Buono and Mr. Johnson. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
We still have a few more items on the agenda. Some of these might be fast. Some of these might be a little drawn out. I'm going to ask the council, would you like to take a 5 or 10 minute recess and we'll come back?
Yes.
Would you like to do that? I think some people might need to.
Well, I don't know.
Let's take a 7.5 minute break. I think it's important, not only for us, but for the audience as well. They're going to go to item number 4, discussion and possible approval on a loan agreement with Grasso Law Firm for legal representation for the PSPRS local board. Mr. Justin Johnson, city manager.
Thank you, Mayor. As it relates to this particular agenda item, the agreement that you have in place with this particular law firm is required by the PSPRS. It's recommended, well, it's required, but the PSPRS local board has to bear the costs associated with this particular expense for legal services. Bottom line, this is what it is. We have a specific retirement coming up. And it is a requirement that we have legal representation in this particular area. It was recommended, the city of Sholo went through this process very, very recently, and it was highly recommended. This law firm came highly recommended from the city of Sholo.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from the council? Do
I move that we approve the agreement with Grasso Law Firm for legal representation for the PSPRS local bond.
I second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the agreement with Grasso Law Firm for legal representation for the PSPRS local board. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. Yeah. Item number 5, discussion of possible approval, direction to staff on the petition received from Laura Smith regarding the Bisbee Farmers Market. I have a short presentation on this particular subject matter. The petition from Ms. Smith from the Farmers Market was presented to the council, has these particular items on that petition. Change the status of the Bisbee Farmers Market from a special event to a weekly community service and outreach program. Eliminate any and all past fees. Change payment status to $40 per week to cover the costs incurred by the city for park usage. Co-sponsor the Bisbee Farmers Market for advertising purposes. The city would not be responsible for any expenses, just the name. So let me state that I am sympathetic to these various proposals. The Farmers Market has essentially become a Bisbee institution, and the social value of its existence is priceless. A few weeks ago, a meeting with Ms. Smith and Mr. Bogues from the Farmers Market, including city staff, myself, and Councilmember Sullivan, and we agreed to present to the council a 6-month extension of the current permit, which the council passed. And this time, the extension will allow the details to be worked out in a new proposal to council that would be coming up in sometime here in the future. A new development has happened with the Community Synergy Solutions Corporation. In a moment, I will defer to Council Member Sullivan to explain that particular development. I believe that we need another meeting with the Farmers Market Group and the Community Synergy Solutions Corporation to work out some of these various details. So tonight I believe we should wait to act on this petition until these particular details are worked out. And once again, my hat is off to the Farmers Market. People who put this event on, they do a fabulous job, and we cannot and will not lose this event over confusion about in my opinion, very small amounts of money. The social aspect of this event is very profound and is priceless, essentially. And let me thank Councilmember Sullivan for creating some solutions for this event. And at this point in time, I'm going to defer to Councilmember Sullivan.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. The Busy Farmers Market was umbrellaed under a 501c3 nonprofit, Baja Arizona Sustainable Agriculture, BASA. And recently, BASA has been going through some organizational changes, and over the last 2 years, frankly, had a director that wasn't fulfilling a lot of the duties and left our the market manager a little bit flailing. So I believe she did the best she could. Some expenses got lost along the way, and she's asking for forgiveness of those expenses and moving forward basically with a clean slate under a new nonprofit, which is Community Synergy Solutions, which she's on the board of. And I am also on the board of that. I'm the president, and it's a community development nonprofit. And that's what the Community Gardens is running under right now. So I personally feel that I would like to just see this this item be possibly, you know, talked about a little bit more tonight. And then, I mean, personally, I'd like to see these things granted. And then we just move on after December when the current permit is up and we start a new permit under Community Synergy Solutions and not waste any more time with more meetings and we just get it over with.
Well, I and Ms. Smith or Mr. Bogues is certainly welcome to participate in this if they so desire. I think that we need to have some very specific details worked out, as I did in this slight presentation, so Council can have a little bit of time to digest that. But I'm on the same page as Councilmember Sullivan on this, but I think it needs to go through staff and get a recommendation from staff to a certain degree, and then Council can act on that. So I would think one more meeting with the Community Synergy Solutions Corporation to work out and have all those details laid down. I think that we owe that to the Council. I mean, two Council members are not even here tonight. So I think it would be a very productive meeting. As that meeting we had a couple of weeks ago, I thought that was extremely important and very, very productive. So my suggestion is we can file this petition and arrange a meeting with the Synergy Solutions Corporation, and we'll work out the various details that you suggested, and I'm sure there's no problem with that. But I think the Council, instead of just acting on it tonight, I think we need to have this a little more formalized is what I think.
Okay.
Councilmember Klein.
I just want to ask what are the past fees? What are we looking at?
Ms. Buono and Laura Smith.
There is some confusion as to the vendor fees are really what's at issue here. It's $4 a vendor. So the interpretation of what really is a vendor, is the Little Bisbee High School graduation fundraiser, is that a vendor? Is the nonprofit animal organizations, are they charged a vendor fee? So we've had a lot of discussion. We haven't come to a consensus yet on what is really a vendor. Ms. Smith feels that the ranchers, where they're selling their goods, that they should be exempt. Some of them sell their goods and some sell made goods, all the same thing. So it gets really clouded, and we've really never have come to an agreement on what a vendor is. So go ahead, Mr. Hansen.
Yes, I've been part of those discussions, and I have to say it takes a lot of time on your part, and it's been on my part and other people's part to try and parse those things. One of the things that I see in the petition is something that we talked about a couple of months ago, is moving to a flat fee arrangement rather than a $4 per vendor arrangement, so that we don't have these disputes, and so we don't have somebody going around counting vendors and say, well, how many really are there? A flat fee arrangement would be of a great benefit, I think, to Sharon and to Laura and everybody else that has been involved in kind of trying to figure out what the actual fees are.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, City Manager.
Thank you. And one of the things I want to clarify, Councilwoman Sullivan made the statement that some of the fees were lost. And Ms. Smith, she can certainly speak to that. And that's the clarification is what's actually being tabulated as relates to a vendor fee, et cetera. So I just want to I just want to clarify that. I don't want folks thinking that
the city lost.
Ms. Smith or the city lost money. I can't speak for any external entity. I can only speak for us. You know, there's nothing that's been lost by the city of Bisbee. So I just want to, my apologies, but I just want to clarify that.
Thank you. I think it was the wrong choice of word, but I didn't know how to say that the exact amount or fees are, you know, somewhat under discussion.
Councilmember Dowdy.
I do like the new title, the Community Service and Outreach Program. I do like that because it it is more.
We've been an educational venue since day one.
We put the farmers market together actually to grow agriculture and to teach growing, you know, and to increase agriculture in this area. And we've done that. We've taught everything from aquaponics to worm farming to everything, mm-hmm. and we still do. You know, and a lot of times we've spent money, rather than paying the vendor fees possibly, we've paid somebody to come and do a class at the market. And that's one of the things. We've sort of ran into a perfect storm several times where there's just really not enough money coming in from vendors. We decided that our senior vendors, the growers that are 85 years old growing their onions, they shouldn't have to pay to come and sell their onions. It makes me feel immoral to charge people like that. Mm-hmm. The children that are coming there and selling their little cupcakes that they're making themselves or little beaded jewelry, I don't feel comfortable charging for that. And so, you know, sometimes there's only enough money made at the market to run the market, which we do okay. For 15 years, we've run the market pretty well with the classes mm-hmm. and everything else. And so so we haven't really asked the city for any money. You know, we've sort of kept it together all by ourselves. So that's what I'm asking for. That's why I asked for the forgiveness. Because the debt is a little, it's confusing about what the debt actually is. And I have been, since I've been working a little harder on it, getting it together, I have been bringing money into you, you know, and I have a bundle right now. I keep the insurance up, you know. I pay the employees, and so anyway, that's well, what I have to say. And we would like to continue with the education. And also the fact we talk about things for kids to do. I know it's only 4 hours a week, but we have a park full of children. And anyone that comes to the market knows that it is packed with kids. And it's safe. It's a very safe environment. We police it ourselves, especially pulling children out of trees and things like that. You know. So anyway, so I thank you for any consideration that we are given. And
yeah.
I'm always happy to see all of you at the market.
Well, let me say this. Some people might think, well, just a one-day event. But we were talking before the meeting tonight, and obviously, when you're having that many vendors and events and special people want to set up for whatever reason that might be, getting musicians. I would imagine you're getting phone calls and dealing with various business aspects all week long. It's not for you and whoever your top assistants are. It's like all the time. It's like every day you're getting stuff.
Yes.
And probably there's confusion. And, of course, in the nature of human behavior, probably some people are not happy about something and you have to work that out and satisfy them. But I will say, you know, and I think the council notices this, at the end of the farmers market on Saturday afternoon, that park is, you would have never known essentially that market even took place that day. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty impressive to me. Mr. Keith Bogues has his hand up. Why don't you come up to the podium so we know who we're talking to, whoever might be listening.
One other thing I would like to say that the market does for the city of Bisbee is we bring most of the people that are vendors at our market come from out of town.
And after the market is over, they go to Safeway, they go downtown and eat, have a drink, they go to the auto parts store, they go to Ace, they get gas. You know, there's a lot of money that comes into the city from the vendors. It's like a little city that moves into Bisbee once a week. So I'd like that to be thought about.
Well, I think about things like that. I do. Mr. Keith Boats.
The market has another value. People like Brian Sully that started at the farmer's market selling vegetarian hot dogs ended up opening a restaurant in the Gulch. Megan started her selling clothing there and ended up with a shop downtown. This is a pattern that happens in the farmer's market, is we have people that come and test their idea at the farmer's market. And then there's also a lot of discussion there among different entrepreneurial people, including myself, as what to do next and how to do it and move up and eventually employ people. And so it's an incubator, and it's the only incubator we got. We do have Mark Schmidt in town now, and he's a great asset too. But historically, this has been the biggest entrepreneurial venue that Bisbee has had. Now, another thing is that I'm personally familiar with several farmers markets in California and Oregon. I've contacted 11 of them. I've gotten responses from two. The Sebastopol, California market pays $50 a month to use a park in Sebastopol. The Corvallis, Oregon farmers market, they pay nothing, and the city spends several hundred dollars a month, $200-$400 a month with garbage, street cleaning, lighting, police, and the market, they actually have two markets, and one of the markets, the food vendors pay tax to the city, and that was pushed through by the Downtown Business Association that wanted the restaurants with overhead and everything to be able to compete on Saturday morning with the farmers market food that didn't have as much overhead. But other than that, they don't pay anything to their city, even though the city pays out quite a bit to support them. The city does get sales tax. One of the two markets is on Friday evening, and it keeps people who work in town from going home, and then they eat dinner and go out and hear the music. And the market is really placed from 3 to 6 so that it will do that, and it brings people in from the other farming towns around there too. And then the bars make more because they stay for the music and everything else. So, and that's really designed to do that. And the first market is on a river, a road down by the river, and it's real pretty and stuff. But the second market was really created by the Business Association to get people into town, and it's working. And as Laura pointed out, our market does that too. So those are some things I wanted to point out. And as I get more correspondence back from these other farmers markets, what I'm asking for is copies of their agreements with the cities and counties that they're in, so that perhaps in the future we can steal, we can plagiarize, make it easier for any documents we want to create. So that's my project anyway. But I've only gotten response from two, and I haven't got any documents yet.
Well, let me sum up my feelings. I buy trees down there sometimes. I'm a tree type of a person. But the market just feels good when you go down there. It just has a good feeling to it. And I'm sure that's for most of the people that go down there. And so it's something that absolutely needs to be preserved. And my hat's off to Laura and all the people that have been involved in it. It's steady. It's there every Saturdays. You know, it's like there all the time. And that creates a nice feeling as well. Anyway, those conclude my comments. Once again, I think that we should file this petition, and staff, we should make an arrangement to meet once again to kind of formalize whatever we're going to have. And I'm no doubt my mind is going to be pretty close to what your petition says, if not exactly what it says, okay? That's my sentiments. Councilmember Sullivan, do you have any more comments on this?
No, I second that. And
okay. Any other members of the council? No? Okay. So that's what we do. We'll file with this, and we'll get a hold of you. You get a hold of us, and we'll have another meeting like we had before, and that's what we'll do. and we'll get this on the agenda. We granted 6 months time on that, so that's what we're going to do.
We pulled item number 6 from the agenda, so now we are going to go to item number 7. Discussion of possible approval of a contract with Certified Folder Display Service for rack card distribution. Jennifer Lurie, Tourism Manager.
This is a contract. We've actually participated in similar contracts for the past 10 years with Certified Folder Display. They distribute our rack cards. This is for the Phoenix area, as well as Picacho Peak and Casa Grande. So any kind of hotel, it could be a Holiday Inn, a boutique hotel, you'll see our little rack cards there, which when I was in Phoenix for the Phoenix Pride Festival, I was in a boutique hotel, and sure enough, there's our card right there. So this is for 1 year, and it was over $5,000, so I wanted to bring it to council just so you could see that. Do you have any questions?
I just one question. I don't know much about tourism business and all that, but do you get people that come in and say, I was at a rest stop or a gas station in Casa Grande, and I saw this card and I came to Bisbee?
I wish it happened that, okay. That easily to get instant results. But the Queen Mine Tour, they also advertise not on this level, and he says it's his best return. So okay. Where we're out there, again, it's eyes on our logo, it's eyes on our website, and just all that helps.
Okay. Any questions or comments from the council? Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the contract with Certified Folder Display Service for rack card distribution.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the contract with Certified Folder Display Service for rack card distribution. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Jennifer.
Item number 8, discussion of possible approval to purchase a refurbished 2008 35-foot boom truck from a private seller in Paradise Valley for a total cost of $23,500 to replace existing boom truck, which has been red-tagged. Mr. Andy Heradic, Public Works Director.
Council. Our existing boom truck is no longer usable. In fact, is in such bad shape, we are considering not even being able to put it in the auction. It's just too dangerous to use a boom truck. So we went about searching for a boom truck, and we found a seller. In your packet, you'll see many of the sellers that we've been contacted. We found a boom truck for $24,999. We offered the seller $23,500, and he accepted that. You have pictures. We have a good number of pictures of the boom truck. The streets crew went out. Three of them went up. They test drove the vehicle. They test used the vehicle. They ran the cables on it. So, and it's amazingly enough, the person who's selling the truck bought the truck for someone to start a business. The business deal fell apart. Because what you really see in here is this is really a pretty good price on this truck when you look at the comparatives for the age of the truck. And the truck is being paid for out of a restricted fund, Fund 21.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. The only question I have, maybe I'll ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a lot of people know what a boom truck is, but probably a lot of people don't know what a boom truck is. It's not a big truck that makes a lot of noise,
no,
like music.
It's a bucket truck.
Yeah, okay.
And she said the same thing. She yeah. couldn't figure out what a boom truck was. She said to me before I came, she goes, tell them it's a bucket truck and not a boom truck. I thought that was funny. So it is a bucket truck. It's how we install Christmas lights. It's how we prune trees.
Yeah. Any questions from the council? Council Member Dowdy.
You said that it has been red tagged. Who red tagged it and why?
Because I red tagged it because the arm that holds the bucket has split over an inch wide and it's no longer usable. It's just no longer usable. The arm holding the bucket, the steel tube that holds it, is broken. And we've got two men up in a fiberglass tub. And the truth was, we went to service the hydraulics on the truck and we pulled the bucket off and we had no idea that it was broken or how long it had been broken. So once we saw that it had been broken and it's in fact made out of fiberglass, it's just not usable. And the other issues with the truck, which I didn't even address them, because it didn't matter, but you know, this got plywood for the floorboards. It came off the assembly line in 1968. The truck still runs, but once the arm mechanism, the mechanism, once that failed, that's just the end of the truck.
Hmm. And Who did it? Who red tagged it?
I did.
You did?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether Highway Patrol or Sheriff's Department.
No. There was no ticket or anything. And in OSHA rules, if a piece of equipment is not functioning properly, you red tag it, meaning that it's a lockout. It's a shutout lockout piece of equipment. It can't mm-hmm. be. Can't even get in the door. It's locked. The key's put away. It's locked that tag down.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So
let's go to Councilmember Klein. She was first.
Since it is red tagged and you said that we wouldn't even be able to take it to auction, what becomes of that piece of equipment?
I think that it needs to be disassembled so that we don't sell a piece of equipment that's this broken. So I think we will have to disassemble the armature on it and mm-hmm. try and just sell the truck as a truck. Somehow, but it needs to be disassembled. I just don't think we should even put it in auction to sell it.
Okay, so then what happens with the piece that is disassembled? What do we do?
We put that in auction. We put everything in auction. We put every computer, every monitor, every old copier. If we had an old copy pot, it would have to go to auction. We would have to dispose of that city property through the auction. So it goes to the auction, it gets cataloged, it lays on the ground. Someone might buy it for scrap.
And to clarify, the disposal process, it would come before council for proper disposal before. So the auction itself doesn't dispose of it. Mayor and council makes a decision to dispose of it, and then at that point we take it through the auction process.
We put everything into the auction, and then you're right, and that's the process. But all of our, anything that you see in this room that we were gonna get rid of it would have to be put in the auction, disposed of properly.
Thank you.
Councilmember Sullivan.
Nope, I'm good. That was my question, was if we would then disassemble it and sell the parts. So I'm good. Thanks.
Councilmember Hansen.
Okay, on the information that we got, and I'm trying to pull it up, but the computer's a little slow here. You had marked that it was between 1,000 and 5,000. And we didn't need a sealed bid. I don't know if that was a mistake or what.
Since it's a used piece of equipment, we're required to have I'm required to provide you with comparative pricing. We didn't go to bid on a new piece of equipment, and there are options that you can go to bid on used equipment, and that's basically what we've done. We're buying a used piece of equipment. We didn't go to an auction. We got the comparative prices. Most of these prices that you see are off auction sites.
Right, okay.
Yeah. And so what we did is we went to a private vendor. We went to the sites with prices, and then we met a private vendor. We bought our garbage truck very much this way. We bought two of our garbage trucks this very same way because we bought them used. We bought a good number of vehicles at Public Works at the auction. Our flatbed truck for recycling, mm-hmm. many things we've actually gone to auction by. So first we have to have the comparison prices, and we submit those, and then we go to auction. We settle a price before we go on how much we can spend, and we would go to the auction.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that, that there wasn't a requirement for a sealed bid or,
No, and I can assure you Ms. Bono would not have let me get this far.
I know she would.
If I wasn't purchasing it properly.
Well, I was just a little confused when it was marked between 1,000 and 5,000.
Our purchasing, once we spend over $1,000, Public Works includes a sheet of paper, and there's when Dee Flanagan was there, she outlined what the purchase procedures for the city were. Mm-hmm. We now use that sheet for anything over $1,000. We then use a sheet. $5,000 is a limit. So once we reach a $5,000 mark, then we must come to mayor and council. I mean, there's a different standard set once you're at $5,000. The number of comparison prices you have to have, and so that's part of the worksheet.
Councilmember Daddy.
You disassemble it to take it to the auction. Where is the auction?
It's on the other side of the garage. It's where the
where they do the cars?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we would just do it right there. Because that way the money goes back into the... It's the city property, so the money goes back into the general. Mm-hmm.
Any other...
Just curious.
Yeah, it's interesting how that goes, because there's a lot of stuff over there.
Yeah. And that's Saturday. The auction is Saturday. For the cars?
It's not this Saturday, but it is on. But Chief, when is the next auction? the 11th of next month.
Any other questions or comments from the council? Do we have a motion?
I move that we approve the purchase of a refurbished 2008 35-foot boom truck from a private seller in Paradise Valley for a total cost of $23,500 to replace the existing boom truck which has been red tagged.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the purchase of a refurbished 2008 35-foot boom truck from a private seller in Paradise Valley for a total cost of $23,500 to replace existing boom truck, which has been red tagged. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Heretic.
Thank you, Mayor.
Item number 9, discussion of possible approval authorizing the sale of surplus vehicles and surplus miscellaneous items at public auction on June 11, 2016 at 9 a.m.
Chief Achavi.
Mayor, Council, the list of vehicles you have, the first set of them, 1 through 12, those are vehicles that are running, that come out of our impound lot. People either failed to pick them up or they've been signed over to the city, and now we're requesting permission to auction those. The second half of that list are vehicles that are non-running, non-operational. They'll be sold as junk, so we kind of separate the two. Bill Bagby, retired Sergeant Bill Bagby, runs the auction for us. He does everything he can to get the vehicles running because a running vehicle brings in more money than a non-running vehicle, so he does what he can. We also have some miscellaneous equipment that we're requesting authorization to sell. There's an industrial stove, I believe it came out of the senior center. There's some miscellaneous laboratory equipment that came out of the wastewater treatment plant. A lot of chairs that came out of the police department, old chairs, and some and a long list of miscellaneous tools that we want to go ahead and get rid of.
Any questions from the council? Councilmember Hansen.
So the truck or the bucket truck that we were just talking about, is there still time to get that in this one, or are we going to have to wait for the next auction?
Yeah, I don't think that we will be ready to have it. I don't think we'll be in a position to have it disassembled and mm-hmm. made proper to auction on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other comments or questions from the council? Do we have a motion?
I move to authorize the sale of surplus vehicles and surplus miscellaneous items at public auction on June 11, 2016 at 9 a.m.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to authorize the sale of surplus vehicles and surplus miscellaneous items at public auction on June the 11th, 2016 at 9 a.m.
All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye. Those aye. Opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Chief Achavi.
Thank you.
We've already going over item number 10. Item number 11, discussion and possible approval of an extension of the employment agreement with City Manager Justin D. Johnson through July 1st, 2016.
Mr. Britt Hansen, City Attorney.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mayor and Council, the Mayor had a discussion with Mr. Johnson a while back in which Mr. Johnson indicated he could stay a bit longer, which the mayor indicated he was grateful for, especially because of the budget process. Wanted to Mr. Johnson to see that through. So he asked me to draft a contract extending Mr. Johnson's contract through July 1 on the same terms and conditions as his current contract.
Before the council. Any questions or comments from the council? Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the extension of the employment agreement with the city manager Justin D. Johnson through July 1st, 2016, but I would like to amend it to January. I'm just kidding.
Second.
We have a motion second to approve the extension of the employment agreement with the city manager Justin D. Johnson through July 1st, 2016.
All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously.
Item number 12,
the city manager's report.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to let you all know I received the monthly financials earlier today, and so I hadn't had an opportunity to really get through them, so I'll have those for you for presentation at our next council meeting. Just a couple things happening in the city. In the fire department, Mr. Leonard Timby is coming down on tomorrow to host and facilitate a extrication class tomorrow at 9 o'clock at the city yard. Captain Castillo, and I can't remember who the other firefighter was, that went up to Tullison to inspect the new fire engine that we're acquiring through the FEMA grant program. So they're heading up to do the inspection. So we'd expect pickup end of this week or beginning of next week, hopefully, and we'll make sure to showcase those through through the community. The police department.
Can I just say something? There's a correction to that. It's now at those guys because they had trouble towing the vehicle.
Now we know. Thank you, ma'am.
It's only changed like three times in 3 hours. So.
Okay. And the police department, as you all had stated already, the recruitment process is continuing, and we're holding testing on May the 28th. In public works, you may have noticed if you've driven up through Old Bisbee, the parking lot across the way from Tweez has been paved and resurfaced. It looks excellent. So the streets division, they've done a heck of a job. It's painted, it's paved, it's concrete bumpers, and I mean it looks fantastic. And also they actually knocked out the parking lot at the Queen Mine Tour. They resurfaced the parking lot up there. It's coming out of Doug's budget, and they're adding a little walkway so that folks, when they walk up from the lower lot, they have a more stable foundation to walk on. So we're really appreciative of that. And so the kind of unfortunate news, maybe good, maybe no, okay. We're having to postpone movies in the park simply because of the wind associated. And Ms. Coronado, Mr. Coronado, and Ms. Williams, we were out last week, you know, having a good time trying to set up this very large screen. And we really wanted to be cautious because there was a small hole in it that I don't know where it was created. It may have been kind of blowing it up and down, but we realized that, look, we just did not want to take that risk. So Ms. Williams and Ms. Coronado, they're working to secure the calendar of movies for the upcoming year, so we'll probably look to push it back within the next maybe 2 weeks later, but we haven't solidified the dates.
We're not playing the movie Gone with the Wind, are we?
If you like.
Scarlet?
So, Mayor, but that's all I have.
Thank you. We have one council comment. Councilmember Hansen.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to give an update on the paving. City Manager Johnson did take some of it up, so it won't be as long. Year one is going to be completed when the following roads are completed, which will be repaved within the next 2 weeks, and that would be in San Jose, Hermosillo, Centennial, thank you, and Buena Vista. The current the street surfaces will be removed starting next week, and then the following week the paving will begin, and it'll take at least 3 days. That paving project should terminate on June 2nd. During the first week of June in San Jose will be Pima, Yuma, and Maricopa drives, which will be resurfaced. Santa Cruz Wash, which needs to be shored up, the Gibeon baskets hopefully will be approved by council on the 7th on 7th meeting, June 7th meeting, and shipping would be about 10 days for the materials, and so hopefully that construction will begin around Monday, June 20th, and that's going to take about 6 days to complete. I think it's going to take a little longer, but I have faith in you, Andy. by the 1st of August, the first week of July, obviously the city is very involved with the 4th of July and be preparing for the 4th of July celebration. So following the 4th, the following streets in Warren are scheduled for resurfacing. Briggs, from Bisbee Road to Mojave. Hotson from Douglas to Mojave Trail, and then also, wait a minute, I'm going to get this right. D'Artremont. Well, I was closer than I was last time. And they're very long streets, and that's the reason there's only, you know, like three or four. We're going to get to D'Artremont if the other two can be completed, because it is going to cost a lot more simply because they are such long streets. By the 1st of August, we'll be moving into Old Bisbee for the remainder of the year, starting with the neighborhood street paving. So we are progressing quite well.
Thank you very much. Do we have a motion?
I move that we adjourn.
I second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion passes unanimously. This meeting is adjourned.